We are now at session four of our study that we've entitled The Worth of Work. And we're going to talk about Solomon on the subject of work, because we're going to be reading and studying exclusively from one of Solomon's books, the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament. So you can be getting to the right spot in your scriptures. And we usually think of Solomon, rightfully so, as a very wise man. He wrote Proverbs, a book of wisdom. He prayed for wisdom, and God granted that to him. God actually gave him the invitation, ask what you want, and he prayed for wisdom, so he knew how to lead God's people, and he was given great wisdom. So a great source to turn to. But I want to just think for a moment, and this doesn't have to be just believers or Christians, but just, you know, there's wisdom from other sources, not obviously as authoritative as the Word of God, but in your particular work world, experience world, interest world, who is somebody, what is a favorite source of wisdom for you, that someone you would think of could give some advice and guidance in a nature that would be beneficial?
Your pastor?
Age.
Okay.
Somebody older than you.
Someone older? Okay. I don't want to get to the spiritual, but thank you for putting pastor in there. I do appreciate that.
In a broad
sense. Yeah. Okay, so someone older, yeah, looking for someone that has more life experience than you, obviously, yes. Who else? What else? Source of wisdom.
The school educators, teachers.
Okay. Yeah.
Someone that has degrees and
that certain credentials. Yeah. Do you look to somebody that has a certain level of success in their field? You know, hey, I've been a failure at everything I've ever done, so turn to me for wisdom. I mean, that's probably not going to be a bestseller. Go ahead. What were we going to say? What'd you say, Bill?
I just said, I've done anything wrong with the president.
I didn't have a dad growing up, and so it's been real important for me to learn how to be a dad to Timmy. And my best friend's dad, he's got seven kids, and all seven of them are saved, and all seven of them are still in church, and three of them went to Bible college. Two of them married somebody that went to Bible college. And so he carries a greater weight.
Yeah, sure.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're all models.
Anyone else says to me about being a dad.
Yeah, I mean, it's someone that's been there and done it, you know, in that way.
Parents or grandparents?
Parents, grandparents, yeah, oftentimes. I enjoy technology. I enjoy gadgetry. I enjoy the computer world. And someone that I don't look up to as a moral role model or that sort of thing, but in the business world, that his life has always fascinated me, has been Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft. And you know a little bit about his background. He began messing around writing computer code when he was a teenager, and he was kind of ordinary. He created one program in high school. His high school asked him to create a program to schedule classes. So he and these four friends were kind of like these computer nerds. So he wrote a thing, but he also embedded something in the code to make sure he got in classrooms with the best-looking girls in the school. According to him, anyway, that's what he did. So he did kind of bend the system a little bit. Went to Harvard, dropped out, started Microsoft. All of us have used somewhere along the line Windows products or computer products. I mean, you know, for a while, the richest man in the world. I think he's been slightly eclipsed, but we don't need to take up a collection for Bill and send him any money. Okay, he's doing all right. But I found a couple quotes, and he was very hard, very driven, very hard on his people early on, very kind of monomaniac of building this business, and you know, so he was maybe not exactly the best model of dealing with people, but he certainly had a lot of drive and energy. He was asked one time his view about God, and this is a quote. His wife is a Catholic. His children are being raised in a Catholic faith via his wife. He says, "I participate," which probably means he goes Christmas and Easter, maybe, I don't know. But anyway, the mystery and beauty of the world is overwhelmingly amazing, and there's no scientific explanation of how it came about. To say that it's generated by random numbers, that does seem, you know, sort of an uncharitable view. I think it makes sense to believe in God. If he'd ended the quote there, it'd have been a really good quote. But then it goes, but exactly what decision in your life you make differently because of it, I don't know. So, you know, he doesn't claim to be an atheist, but he doesn't fully embrace God as we know it. Here's a couple business quotes. This one I thought was very good. Success is a lousy teacher. It seduces smart people into thinking they can't lose. Sometimes success can ruin you, you know. This one I thought was good for in the business world. Your most unhappy customers are the greatest source of learning. There's a bit of wisdom there, and if you think about it. This one I thought was interesting. Capitalism has worked very well. Anyone who wants to move to North Korea is welcome. So, anyway. And in some ways, Solomon, even though he's writing in the Bible, is sort of an unlikely source of wisdom because a man who had great success, I mean, he was the Bill Gates of his day. He had more power, more influence, more fame, more, you know, wealth, opulence. You know, I mean, just anything he wanted, he had access to. And he had some great successes. But if you've ever read the last end of his life, it did not end well in his relationship to God. There was a lot of defection away from God. And the other part that makes going to him as a source of wisdom is Ecclesiastes, the book that's open in front of you. It's one of the more unusual books in the Bible because it is written, purposefully written, you know, inspired by God like the rest of the Bible, but it's a very horizontal book. It's just looking at life on this level. Yeah, he references God and that sort of thing, but there's a lot of cynicism and jadedness about life in the book. And if you just look at life on this level, go ahead, you might as well be. But you know, he keeps sort of, it's sort of like a struggle, you know, where is God in all this and that sort of thing. But he does have a lot to say about work. And I want to be honest with you, there's several verses we could have looked at if we had time that deal with work in the negative, about how difficult labor is and laborious it is. So that is in the book. I've purposely selected the positive sections. I'm not trying to claim that there's not, but we're just looking at a part of it. So let's look at some of these verses together and think our way through, and maybe this will help us. First of all, we're going to be in chapter 2, verse 24. Ecclesiastes 2:24, with someone with a nice, clear, melodious voice can read that for us. Mm-hmm. Or if there's anyone like that in the room, whoever wants to read may.
I'll read it. Nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God.
There's two parts to this verse. And what is Solomon's viewpoint, his perspective on what we get out of work? What's the return on the investment?
Our provisions.
Provisions. What?
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction, good work. Yep, it's all there.
For our soul.
Yeah, that's part of it too. It's actually a multi-part answer. If you look at the verse, nothing's better than man should eat and drink. That's part of the provision. We get our provision from our work. That his soul, there is that touching, should enjoy good labor. There is that satisfaction, that there's something fulfilling about it. There are people, I don't think there's any around this table, I would not think that. There's people that would argue directly with that verse, with that statement. There's nothing good about work. It's all bad. It's all negative. It's all pointless. It's all, you know, the system is rigged or whatever, you know. It's all bad. That doesn't mean that everything is good in the work world. So, but look at this phrase. This also I saw was from the hand of God. So the ultimate source of this is, easy question, jump on it, is, where's it all come from?
God.
Thank you. I think it was so easy. I think somebody were like, that's surely not the answer. Yeah, it comes from God. This is part of God's deal with us. This is part of what he's given to us. It's not a necessary evil. It's not just what has to happen in this capitalistic society that we live in, in our world. This is part of what God has given to us. This is good. And so really there's these twin themes that kind of runs through these verses. It's good. You should receive something from it, mainly, totally, ultimately satisfaction and all the other benefits. But at the same time, don't forget, he's very keen to remind us that God has given us this. God has given us this. Let's go ahead.
This goes back to what you said there. Success is bad for you because you think you're, you know, that's what people who are successful, most of the time we think well, I'm successful. And that was a vast, this is a favorite book of mine because I was saved in junior high. When I got to college, I strayed for 20 years. In the 40s, I came back to Jesus Christ because of this book.
Really? Okay.
Because of this book, reading this book. And mm-hmm. You see Solomon, he had it all, and he was totally unsatisfied.
Yeah.
I went to college, worked hard. Like our age, the theme of my generation was, go to school, work hard, and you'll be happy. I went to school, did well, yeah, got out, set up my practice, and I was miserable, just like Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Then I realized, just like what he just said there, my success was not from what I did.
Mm-hmm.
It was what from God
came. Yes. Yes, and it's a revolutionary, different point of view.
Changed my life, that version.
Yeah.
So I said, this is a very, very special book to me because it's a book that brought me back. Because I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Bill. Thank you for sharing that.
But we teach our kids today that you go to school, you work hard, you study hard, you get out, you make a lot of money, and you'll be happy. And then when you get there and you're miserable, then successful, you think, well, I'm successful because I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the gifts that Solomon does when he references work. And you'll see this in these next verses. There's always something about the Lord's work in there. And I think that's what he's wanting to kind of drill into our heads. Don't leave God out of the equation or it's destined to fail. You're going to come up with the wrong answer. The point is not just being successful. I got more money than the next guy, or I've done better, or I proved something to somebody. It's, I'm doing this for God's glory. We talked about it a little bit, and we'll talk more about it later. Yes, sir?
What does he mean in the last sense? This also I saw was from the hand of God. That means something.
We're doing a little bit of injustice just jumping in and pulling a verse out. But he's kind of looking around every venue of life and kind of making his observation on it. So I think it's just a way of saying, I looked into the work world, and this is what I saw there.
So there's nothing that God wrote on and gave him something. He means it just from what his observations
are. Yes, yes, and I think it's a genuine observation. But it's an observation that, and this is part of when he gets very kind of, it's all empty, it's, you know, the old King James, it's vanity and vexation, is when when you look at it strictly from the horizontal, without have this vertical connection to God, everything is empty.
The promises.
Yes, yes.
Satan's promises always turn out to be hollow.
Yes, yes.
This is a good example.
Yes, very good. Let's go to 3:13. Maybe this will shed a little more light on this. Would someone like to read that?
And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God.
Again, you see it just there. It connects back in. And I love this thought that it is a gift. If someone were to challenge you on this, you say, oh, this is a gift from God. Explain to me how this is a gift from God. Blah, 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 whatever. How would you defend that? I don't see a gift to God. I mean, I have to work all these hours, and it's tiring and it's laborious, and I'm not getting paid enough, whatever, whatever, whatever.
Sometimes a lot of us get jobs that we don't have any business having, or we get it ahead of time, or we get it when we need it,
mm-hmm.
and not before. So like me, most people that start at the prison don't start till they're like 30. I started 21 years old. Like, that was, God gave me that job,
mm-hmm.
and he gave it to me way ahead. They're 45-year-old men that I've got 3 years seniority on, that they're going to have to work until they're 60. When I'm their age, I'm done. You know, that is God's gift to me.
Mm.
And then there are other people.
It's good perspective.
You know, sometimes God stops them from working themselves into a coma or a heart attack by putting the brakes on them.
Yeah. We are all, the human race is a race of extremists, you know. You got the people you couldn't get them to work if you hooked a 220 wire up to them and fired up the generator. And some people work themselves to they're killing them and themselves and everything around them. You know, there's
work on 220.
Work is a good form of
regular. I'm referencing your experience earlier today that you talked
Shocking
about.
Experience.
Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
Work is a good sort of recreation, really. And And sometimes it can relieve a lot of anxiety, a lot of frustration.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Look at all the folks on TV don't have jobs and all the trouble they're getting into all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, work will help you.
Yeah, good.
At least
good.
That's what I was
talking about.
Keeps you out of trouble.
Yeah, well, well, we've already studied that earlier. Brett had his hand up.
My dad always went to work. At the time, he had a pretty good size form, and I had an X amount of work to do. And I was very young. And he expected it done.
And if it wasn't done, he noticed.
I did.
Yeah, he did. Okay.
Your tail got that.
I would say that probably most of the people around this table, when they get, whether it be mowing their grass or getting their job done that they have to do for employment, they look back on it and they're proud of the job that they've done. You know, I mean, I was always proud, whether it be cutting grass or, you know, running cable or whatever. When I did a good job, I felt proud. I felt good that I was able to complete that task.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's...
Yeah.
I get that as a gift because I think every one of us, no matter what job we do, we all know somebody who's a lot smarter than us, has worked a lot harder than us, who is not as well off as what we are today.
Yeah.
And that's it's a gift because we know people who are smarter than aren't as blessed.
Yeah. It kind of takes the self focus out of it too. And you were hinting at this earlier that look what I did. Mm-hmm. Yay. Well, you know, every breath you took during your work career, God gave you that gift of that breath and that time and that effort and the opportunity and all that. So very good. You know, something else I think you think about a gift is to be not only enjoyed but also to be shared. And I don't think this is, you know, it's a gift of God. You know, God gave us a gift. But in some ways, in our work world, we can give gifts. I remember one time when I worked a sales job, the people in sales didn't want to get their hands dirty, like moving material and cleaning places. And, you know, so there was sort of a little bit of a animosity between parts of the team. I remember one time I'm trying to provide for a family. I got two kids at the time, and anyone wants to work some extra hours, you can work doing the manual stuff. I was like, sign me up. I mean, I need some extra income. And I remember working, and I just decided, I'm going to go in with the best attitude because I know the people I'm going to be working with aren't expecting me to put out any effort, or they're expecting me to whine because I'm doing this menial, and there is no menial job. But I remember I thought, this whole shift, I am going to just, my job is to be a gift to these people that I'm working with. It was just amazing. It was actually, you talked about recreation. I mean, I'm glad that was added, those hours were added to my paycheck, but, you know, I want to be a gift to someone else. And you can be a gift to the people you work with, or you can be a burden to the people you work with. You can be a real pain to the people you work with if you want to. Chapter 9, verse 10. This is an interesting one. This one gets a little closer to sort of Solomon's processing his observations on life here. Someone like to read that, chapter 9, verse 10?
Whatever your hands find to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going.
It sounds so positive at the beginning, mm-hmm. and then by the time you get to the end of the verse, it's like, because you're going to die, that's why. You're going to throw you in a hole and cover you with dirt, you know, it's like, okay. But he is making a point here, and I had to kind of, as going through some of these verses, like, what are we getting at here? And he does make a point. There is a certain limitation to all of activities and all of our stuff, all of our knowledge, all of our wisdom. And what's the great limiter on all that? It's the end of the verse.
Death.
Yeah, you're going to die someday. We've been talking on Sunday mornings about the return of Christ. If that happens while we're alive, you know, we do cheat the Undertaker, that generation, whoever they are, whether it's us or later. But you know, there's a finiteness to our work life. It will come to an end. And... How do you think, and I really don't have too many ideas here, so I need some help with this one.
It's like in football when they told you leave it all out on the field, because after that fourth quarter, you're not going to remember how much you saved. Like, you either put it all out, that you can only go so far.
Okay.
Like, at the end of the day, you either put everything in or you didn't. And what you didn't, you'll never get back.
Okay. And that goes back to whatever your hand finds, do with all your might. Work hard. Work. What's that?
No regrets.
Yeah. 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 Do everything you can do. And if you've done everything you do, whether it's whatever the outcome, whatever the score, I have the satisfaction I know I did my best. Yep. And that's all I can do.
And as usual, I guess I've got a
go ahead.
Little stranger way of looking at things, but I'm looking at it as an eternal thing,
mm-hmm.
because once you hit the grave, you can't do any more for God. Mm-hmm. That's it. What you've done is over. You can't continue to glorify
okay.
Him.
Okay. All right. It has a clarifying function to think about the importance of the here and now and
your ministry redeeming the time.
Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts on this verse? This was the hard one in the whole setup for me. I understand. Work hard. Give it all your might.
The people that have worked hardest are typically the ones that leave something generations later to talk about.
Hmm.
You know, we don't remember the presidents that didn't do anything. Nobody knows who the 10th president was. Like, we all remember the ones that won wars.
Yeah.
We all remember the ones that, you know, led great reforms. And it's the same thing with everything. We don't name buildings after people that sucked at business. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just a fact. Like, yeah. we name buildings and we name our children after people that got stuff done.
Okay.
That's right. Okay. Nobody names their kid Adolf anymore.
No.
Especially in Germany.
No, or the entire Western world. Yeah.
Benito.
Yeah.
No one's named their kid.
All right. Any other thoughts before we move on? Okay, one last question. We've looked at three passages now, chapter 2, chapter 3, and chapter 10. What's the connection? If you had to stop now and summarize, what's the connection between the three? What's the theme that ties them together? What's the thought that ties them together?
It's the plan God has for us, His work.
Mm-hmm. Well said. I've actually thought of two, and that's one of the two I thought of. Maybe you thought of others too, so that's okay. But and what else? Yeah, work is what God has for us. Deal with it.
If you don't work, you don't eat.
Yeah.
I see a contrast.
We had that discussion already, yeah.
But that's not true. You can not work and eat.
Yes.
You have a lot of these people that do not work.
This is true. That's true. So, and you have to go back to the context of that, you know, he was talking about how the church ministers to the needy. And, you know, in their day, the neediest class were widows. So, because, you know, that was the neediest class. But if the widows had family, the family was supposed to take care of them. If they didn't have family, then the church was supposed to take care of them. But if there's somebody out there that was an able-bodied person, then that verse says, you know, that was the biblical church expectation for that. But you're right, it doesn't work that way.
On that.
I'm sorry, what?
Church take care of it, and it wasn't an age limit on that.
Yeah, Paul puts, and I'd have to go back and actually look it up. Yeah, there were stipulations, because the expectation was the younger women probably are going to get remarried.
Yeah.
You know, so that was that factored into it as well.
And then the main thing in there too, the youngest man was supposed to take the widow into his house and take care of it too. That could be a bad thing.
But you know, even with the
seven dead brothers,
the government.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, say again.
the government. I mean, you know, when Bill Clinton was president, they signed a law that if you got a check, you had to work.
Yeah.
Okay, and poverty levels in America dropped because they were 6 years ago. The current president says, no, that's you don't have to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened to poverty in America?
Well, yeah, and there's a rule. I think it's someone.
So work does it.
Yeah, it does. And someone that knows economics better than I does, that I do, comes up with it. But it's true. Whatever the government subsidizes, it gets more of.
And not once have we prayed and for that man individually.
We have a system that subsidizes poverty, so we get more of it.
It's not good.
There's always going to be some people in poverty. I mean, that's a given. But
product of your environment.
Yeah.
Anything you reward, you increase it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, anything you tax, you decrease it.
We have a person that I know works every day, has some limitations in ability, but trying to do the right thing, go to work, needs a new vehicle, and we as a church are working on this. But there's an organization here in town that you can donate cars to, and they will refurbish them and help people. She doesn't qualify because she works. If she would quit work and get a diagnosis and get on disability, she gets a car. And it's just like, I just want to pull my hair out, you know?
Punished for doing the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. And but God bless this person. I'm going to do the right thing. And God's going to provide. And yes, he is. And
why are most young people not getting married today? It's because if they get married, they won't take care of the kids. Kids.
Well, that's.
You know, it's the same thing. So we increase
what you subsidize, you get more of. Mm-hmm. Let's go to chapter 5 because I do want to finish this up. 5:18, 19 and 20. Let me just read this. Here's what I have seen. Again, as I've looked around, this is what I've seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him, for it is his heritage. Now, God warns us about selfishness. He wants us to be generous. Okay? But at the same time, if God has provided it through your labor, you know, there's sometimes people are guilted for enjoying what they have. You know, why do you have that? No one else has. I mean, there's a balance in all this. But notice this last phrase of 18. For it is his heritage. It's almost connected to like an inheritance. This is what God has left for you. This is what God has given you. And it goes back to what you summarized very well there a moment ago, Brian. Work is what he's given you. This is part of God's giftedness to you, part of his blessing to us. Okay? Verse 19, for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage, there it is again, and rejoice in his labor, it is the gift of God. He sort of restates it one more time again. It's okay to enjoy work and what it produces. What can we do? And we'll get into this over the next couple of questions. What can we do to enjoy our work more? What practical steps can we do? I think my observation is the majority of people, even in businesses they've started, they're working for themselves or being very successful, working for a corporation or whatever, a lot of people don't have a lot of, we talked about one of the surveys that we looked at earlier, you know, 60% of people are dissatisfied with their work life and situation. What can we do as God's people that would maybe help us in that?
You know, what we do with young people, we try to do with young people is help them to think about what kind of work they would enjoy and then prepare for that work.
Yeah.
Instead of ending up having to take a job and do work that you don't really enjoy doing and maybe end up doing it for the rest of your life. So I think that part of it is just to try to prepare people early, especially young people, to find that job that they really think they'll like.
Yeah.
I think those people are happier in what they do because, you know, a lot of people who do, especially people who do hard labor most of their life, work's not very enjoyable. It provides a living. It gives them something to, so they, but it's hard to say, well, you know, I feel really good about that. It's actually something they had to do just to survive.
Yeah, and trying to plug into your giftedness and your interest. That's right. There's a lady here in the church that teaches in the school system, and part of what she teaches is career assessment or career, I don't know, there's a sticker term for it. And I said, well, how does that go? She said, well, I'm working with middle school students, and the problem is they all want to be music stars or play professional sports.
Or video game developers.
Oh, yeah, okay. And, you know, and I, when you're a middle school student, okay, I understand that. But part of it is like, okay, let's deal with the...
We always say, if you can't do that, then what?
Yeah, what's plan B, okay? Because you might need a plan B, you know. I was thinking this week of, you know, we just had the NFL draft, you know. Of course, if you take Marshall and WVU, how many players on each roster, right? How many of them were drafted into the NFL? You know, what, six or eight, you know? How many of them will make a team? How many of them maybe will make a team and be, I don't know, but it's just like, it's a very small.
One was picked in the first round.
Yeah, it's a very small group at the pinnacle. So anyway, I don't know how I got on that.
I challenge that because some of the happiest people I know do the most meaningless jobs that are around. Okay? I challenge that. That's what I was taught.
Yeah,
and it's our attitude.
It is our attitude.
It's a gift. It's a gift from God.
There are some people because of. I mean, it both is true. There are some people though that were gifted and should have done more and could have done a different thing, and they're stuck because of their own activities.
I think the key is doing your best.
That is true. Yeah, I'll grant you that. What's that?
They're stuck with regrets.
Yeah. Okay, let's one more verse, verse 20. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. God does somehow, some way through it all, want to infuse into us joy and satisfaction in our life. One question I want to get to. Since God's work is God's heritage, what he intends for us to have, okay, how should we treat it as part of his eternal plan? But look at this next. How can you pass this on to the generation to follow? How do we train the next generation these truths about work life?
We can't.
That's not true.
They're knuckleheads, just like in Luke when he said, "Go back and tell my brothers."
You ain't met my son.
They're knuckleheads. Everyone's knuckleheads.
Yeah, well,
I truly believe that.
Maybe knuckleheadedness is curable. Really,
you got to experience it. You got to make those mistakes.
You ask my son what men do, he'll tell you they go to work. My son, when I'm out there mowing grass, he'll come and mow grass with me. He wouldn't have hopped in on that.
Yeah.
You have to set an example.
Yeah.
If you complain about work to your kid all the time,
that
you're going to complain about work.
That brings, what'd you say, Sonny?
I said people don't want to work today. They want to stay on food stamps.
Well, okay, we're getting into editorializing, but that's okay. I can editorialize with the best of them. We're about out of time. I want you to go to these next two questions. Rate your enjoyment level of your current work. You're going to have to do that on your own. You're on your own with that one. But what one concrete step can you take to increase your own satisfaction from drawing satisfaction from your work? What can you? I've got a couple things lined up to share with you, but I want to hear what can we do to help us.
Are you talking about without changing jobs?
Yes. Let's assume that. And there's nothing wrong with changing jobs or moving on, moving up, moving over, whatever.
What
or starting new careers.
Your job.
Yeah. In the present tense, okay. Because. I think part of the next generation thing is, and the older I get, the more like my parents I find I am. And, you know, and as my children have now are getting into their late 20s and early 30s, the more like their mom and I they are. You know, I mean, there's the old saying, more is caught than taught. It is so true, and it's so scary oftentimes. It's also a very positive thing, but, you know, that sort of thing. But what can we do to draw satisfaction from our work, because I think that's the greatest impact we can have on those that come after us. How they see us working, but again, you go back to attitude and so forth. What are they hearing? I'm looking for that one concrete step.
Pray. that's what I would imagine.
Yep.
Just pray for a positive attitude.
Okay. Very good. That's one concrete step. Very good. Any others you'd like to add?
Step back when it's frustrating. Look at the bigger picture. Why am I doing all this?
Yeah.
You still may be having a wonderful job and just having a bad day that day.
It's true.
Okay. Bigger picture, good. Good. Step back.
Why am I here?
What's that?
Why am I here? God has allowed me to be in this position, so what does he want to use me for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be thankful every day that you have a job.
Yeah. That's one of my two, is be thankful.
Be thankful
you
can get out of bed.
Yeah. And, be thankful I'm still breathing this morning.
Our old pastor say that God has trusted with as much as money that he thought he could trust him. He's given him only enough money that he could trust him with.
Yeah.
He knew that if he gave him more money that he would. But I think always doing your best and realizing your enjoyment's not going to come from your job. It's going to come from family and your relationship with God.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Bill. The two I thought about. One is be thankful, and one of the things I thought about is if you commute to work somewhere between home and work, find a moment to say thank you for I get to work. Or maybe you do it in reverse. On the way home, you closed up, you're heading back to whatever the evening or whatever your work shift is. Thank you, Lord, for what you let me put in. But secondly, one thing I thought of is try, and I think this is good for those of us who have children in the home and people we're influencing, try to frame your discussions of work in the most positive way possible. Yeah, they're going to know you struggle and have a bad day and it's difficult and all that, but just the way we term it as Solomon does repeatedly, give Solomon credit for this. He says, it is the gift of God. It's part of your heritage. It's what God has for us. He frames it in language that is positive. It's not all fun and roses. And you know, I've used this with all three of my children as they've gotten into their work life. You know, they get to complaining about whatever. There's a reason they pay you to do this.
Yeah.
There's a reason they pay you to do this because it's not all fun. If it was just all fun, people would do it for free. And so that sort of thing. Here's our bottom line. Since work is part of what God gives us, we can find satisfaction in it. So Solomon on work, that's what we've looked at today. And I don't know if it'll be next time or the time after the next time, but one of the things we're going to look at is our work life does not stop when we go to heaven. Okay? Now, that should encourage you. You don't want to hear that?
I was just thinking some of these guys got to start up again.
You got something looking forward to, man.